to the Community Action Advisory Board meeting on May 6th. We are conducting this meeting via WebEx in light of the stay-at-home order and proclamation by the governor. As Rebecca mentioned in the beginning, this meeting is being recorded. We will be taking a verbal roll call for attendance this morning for CAB board members. For everyone who's at home, the instructions on how to conduct this meeting is on the screen. Just as a reminder, please ensure that your mute button is on at all times, unless you're going to vote or talk. Make sure you don't have your video on so we can have priority video for our two interpreters on the line. And also, before you talk, please identify yourself verbally so people know who's talking. And we're not able to use the chat functionality in WebEx this morning due to public disclosure rules. So with that, I'd like to ask Rebecca to take a verbal roll call.
Good morning. Linda Glover?
Here.
Doug Boff?
Here.
Alicia Topper?
Present.
Amy Boget?
Present.
Jamie Spinelli?
Here.
Karen Camera?
Present.
Tom Breitenbach?
Here.
Amy Rourke? Amy Rourke? Not here. David Poland?
Here.
Adam Kravitz? Adam, you'll need to unmute yourself.
I'm here.
Thank you. Bridget McLemon?
Here.
Melanie Green?
Here.
Hillary Pepla?
I'm present.
Fantastic. It's great to see such a large group here today. We also have staff, Beth Flandry.
Good morning, everyone.
Michael Torres.
Good morning here.
Janet Snook.
Good morning.
And myself. We also have several additional participants on the call that are interested in our discussion about the CSBG COVID funds.
All right, thank you, Rebecca, and welcome everyone. It's a beautiful Tuesday. So we do have a very full agenda this morning. We will start off the meeting with an action item. We do need to approve the March minutes. So I would entertain a motion for approval.
This is Hillary, I motion to approve.
This is Tom Breitenbach, I second that motion.
Janet, were you able to capture those names?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
I'm not seeing the interpreter. I'm not seeing the interpreter interpreting.
So, David, if you do the side-by-side version of the screen, you can see that there's a small button up at the top right corner that you can change how you view it. And then you can pin the interpreters. By clicking on their picture.
Was that helpful, David?
Yeah, I'm working on it. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. So I do have a motion and a second on the table. Any discussion? Is there any discussion on the motion on the table? Hearing none, I call for the vote. Rebecca, could you please do roll call?
Linda Glover?
Approve, yes.
Doug Boff?
Yes.
Alicia Popper?
Yes.
Amy Bogey?
Yes.
Jamie Spinelli? Karen Kamaroff?
Approved.
Breitenbach?
Approved.
Just as a reminder, please ensure after your vote that you put your microphone on mute. Thank you.
David Poland?
Yes, approved.
Adam Kravitz?
Approved.
Bridget McClemon?
Approved.
Melanie Green?
Approved.
Hillary Pepula?
Approved.
And the motion passes.
Okay, thank you, everyone. We got through our first order of business successfully. So we are going to pass the microphone over to Rebecca to talk about the CSBG COVID-19 supplemental funding recommendations. So go ahead, Rebecca.
Good morning. So we've all been inundated with COVID-19 information, and we've been doing a lot of research on what we can do with these additional dollars. So during the CARES Act, Congress has provided funding in several different streams, and one of them is through the Community Services Block Grant. They allocated $1 billion with a B to this system, which is significantly higher than what our annual allocation is. The priority for these funds is to prevent, respond to, or recover from COVID-19 and the pandemic. Unfortunately, we have not received guidance from the Health and Human Services Department, federal department, on exactly how we can use these funds. But we have been provided some information saying that as long as we meet those one of those three criteria, the prevent, respond to, or recover from the pandemic, and it was eligible in the previous annual allocations, it should be eligible moving forward with these supplemental funds. And so that was part of our discussion internally on how we would move forward with this. The State Department of Commerce, who allocates the funds directly to us, was able to give us kind of a rough idea of what they thought our allocation might be. Again, we haven't heard from HHS on what the specific dollar amount will be. But with that rough estimate, we were able to then put together kind of an estimate and move forward with a plan of action so that we can get these dollars out into the community as fast as possible. So working with our finance unit, we roughly estimate $400,000 will be available for us to put out into the community. With that, we had been hearing and seeing in media and hearing from our partner agencies about a significant increase in requests for services in each of their programs. So our priority is to make sure that the programs that we have already provided funding to through the request for application, make sure that they are able to handle the additional capacity. So we asked the agencies to put together a brief application. We asked them how they're being impacted by the pandemic, how their agency or their program specifically is being impacted, how they would be able to use the funds and make sure that it was, meeting one of the three criteria as far as preventing, responding to, or recovering from the pandemic. And then how they would be using the funds and, putting together an actual budget. So the next few slides are just a really brief synopsis of those applications that were provided to us. And then if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer. So 211 Info is requesting $54,000 to increase their staff capacity to be available 24/7 through July. And that will cover services in Clark County. It is increasing their staff capacity to provide almost constant updates to their database as programs are constantly changing in our community to meet the needs and the stay-at-home requirements. And then it also increased the staff capacity to extend their partnership with Council for the Homeless to answer the housing hotline after the Council for the Homeless typically closes their line during the day. The Clark County Food Bank Fresh Alliance Program, we specifically fund the Fresh Alliance Program to pick up donated food from grocery stores. So their request is to, for $40,750, is to cover what our funding doesn't. So if you'll remember, we did not fully fund this application back in the original request for application. And they are coming in and asking for the funds that they were putting in for their general fund. This would then allow them to have those general funds available to then pay for the increased cost the agency is seeing because of a significant increase in demand, along with the increased cost of food that they're having to purchase because there's not as much of a supply through the food banks where you can get a lot of food rather cheaply. They're supplementing by purchasing them in other ways, and so this would allow them to free up those funds to meet that need. The Clark County Volunteer Lawyers Program, their access to justice, is requesting $145,000. This would provide two additional staff members. They are anticipating approximately a 50% increase in services over the next 2 years. The staff would be an employment lawyer. Clark County does not have many trained employment legal services to help within that specific area of law. And so this would hire somebody to significantly increase the capacity we have here in Clark County. And the other would be a program coordinator that would do several things, but one of those things would be running a new domestic violence protection order docket. The Volunteer Lawyers Program has spoken with other DV providers and has found that they are over capacity. So this would also increase what Clark County can offer as far as protection order assistance. So it would be two new staff for the Volunteer Lawyers Program. The Clark College Financial Wellness Program is requesting $60,000, would also increase staff capacity to provide the individualized financial wellness coaching to approximately 300 additional students. They are seeing a significant increase in requests for the financial coaching along with emergency grant assistance, especially where we're looking at laptops and hotspots and things like that to be able to attend college courses through online means until the school is able to go back to more business normal where students are attending classes. They have indicated they've received other grants and donations specifically for the emergency grant assistance. So this would be primarily for the staff capacity increase. Partners in Careers for their Career Academy program is requesting $51,000, also to increase staff capacity as they do a new normal, where they're providing smaller class sizes in their work sessions, and so doing them more often at smaller class sizes, but also providing equipment to staff to be able to do that remote work and to for participants. So they would do purchase laptops and loan them out, hotspots, provide data and phone services so that people could still participate in the program and move towards employment through online means. And then SHARES Hunger Response is requesting just shy of $100,000. They're asking for funds to help pay for the staff. They have their volunteers have significantly reduced because of the high risk nature. And then their food costs have gone up significantly. They had previously purchased most of their food through the food bank, but now they're not able to do that. There's very few options. And so they're purchasing a lot of food through the grocery store, which is significantly more expensive than the food bank. So those are the six programs and what they're requesting. Again, we estimated that we would have about $400,000 available. We got $454,000 in requests, which is about 88% is how we could fund them. And that is my recommendation so that the programs can all move forward. I also want to state that that $400,000 is an estimate. And once we know, we always estimate conservatively. So I believe we will have a little bit more than $400,000 available. So we would be able to fill in the requests a little at a little bit higher rate than the 88%. But this I can guarantee that we can do. And that with that, I will open up the floor to Alicia.
Thank you, Rebecca. Just as a reminder, we aren't using the video functionality this morning to allow for our interpreters to have a larger space on the screen. I think the only person, Bridget, maybe your video, if you could flip that off. And then for the discussion, in order to have some order, what I'd like to do is to ask everyone at home to mute your microphones, and then board members who would like to have discussion, if you can unmute, I can see all of us on my screen. And if you unmute your mic, I will call on you. Only person that needs to mute their mic that isn't muted is Eddie Blakely and Doug Boff. If you could please mute now, and then when you want to talk, Doug, you'll just unmute your mic. So as of
I've tried to figure out how to get rid of my camera. Sorry.
So I think if you hover over the screen, Bridget, there should be some icons at the bottom that pop up. And one of them is a circle with a white camera with a line through it.
Yes.
If you click on that, that should turn off your camera. Thank you. And Eddie, if you could turn your camera off as well. Scroll to the bottom of the screen and you'll click the little red dot that has a white outline of a camera with a line through it. And while Eddie figured that out, I did see that David did unmute his mic. David, did you want to ask Rebecca a question?
Yes, I have a question. You were saying that these needed to be somehow related to prevention or recovery or something else related to COVID. And I'm not sure that Access to Justice, one about domestic violence, how is that related?
So across the country, we are seeing a significant increase in domestic violence calls and issues with people being required to stay home with their family, and it is causing an increase in domestic violence services. But this program also will help with employment law as we see unprecedented numbers of people requesting services or unemployment services and having issues getting those services along with all of their other programs will also see a significant increase in requests for legal assistance. I just pointed out a couple of the ones that were kind of big changes for Clark County as a whole.
Thank you.
Bridget Clemon?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Bridget.
I just wondered, did the request for funds come with any outcome measures, like an increase in outputs or connected things like that?
Yes, that was one of the questions that I asked in the application, and thank you, because I knew there was four and I forgot one of them in the beginning. But yes, so that was one of the questions. And I do have the applications available if you would like to see them. Some of them are pretty short. I really was asking for a very brief application. I only had it open for a week as we were trying to wait as long as we could from the Department of Health and Human Services to see how we could specifically use, you know, get that guidance and hopefully get a funding amount and then be, you know, in time for us to have the CAB meeting so that we could move quickly on getting these funds out.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bridget. Doug, I noticed that you have your mic unmuted. Would you like to ask a question? I'm thinking maybe Doug may be having a little bit of maybe technical difficulty. Okay, so what we are being asked to do this morning, board members, in consideration of this staff request and proposal, as the members of the board, we have the fiduciary responsibility of approving these recommendations through a formal action. What I'd like to do now is I would like to call and ask for a motion on the recommended amounts for 211 Info, Clark County Food Bank, Volunteer Lawyers Program, the Clark College Financial Wellness Program, Partners in Career Academy, and the Share Hunger Response Program in the amounts recommended. After we have a motion, and if there is a second, we will have further discussion. So at this time, I do call for a motion on the proposal on the floor.
This is Melanie Green, and I make a motion to approve the recommended amounts.
This is Karen Kamaroff. I second that motion.
I have a motion and second on the floor. Board members, is there further discussion? And I notice that David has his mic unmuted. Is there further discussion, David?
No, I just wanted to do a second, but she got to it before me.
Okay, very good.
Alicia, I have a question, Alicia.
Yeah,
this is Hillary Prepula. I was wondering if this is all the CSBG funds, and I know there was a stream of emails to the CAB members about the difference between the CSBG. Were there any other programs? I don't have the list of all the approved CSBG funding. Were there any other programs that did not request certain amounts or were otherwise funded somewhere else? I guess this question is more for Beth or for Rebecca.
So these are all of the programs that fall under our community action program. So we have community action programs and we have homeless crisis response system programs. They're funded with different streams of funding. All the community action programs are these that are listed, and they all had the opportunity to apply, and they all did.
Okay, so there are no other community action programs being funded right now under CSBG.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. That answers my question.
Bridget McClellan, so that was my question. These funds were only available for CSBG and not for people that we funded under the homeless crisis response system. Is that right?
That is correct. These are, you know, community service block grant program funds specific for community action, the community action side of the work that we do. There are other funding streams that are coming down the line for the homeless crisis response system, and we'll talk about those here in a couple of slides, so you'll have more information about that. I also wanted to let you know that there is rumors, they're just rumors at this time, that there may be an additional allocation of community service block grant funds. Congress is talking to David Bradley with the National Community Action Foundation about could our system use additional funds? Yes, of course we could use additional funds. But there might be some strings attached to it that they're trying to discuss. The timeline for those, it sounds like it's at least a month away. And we don't know what the funding would look like. They're estimating anywhere from $250 to $500 million. And then at that time, once we know more about that and what changes and what guidance they're going to have with those funds, we can make another plan. I've been contacted by different programs in our community, that are struggling and or have, increased capacity. Everybody is getting increased capacity right now, their requests for assistance. And they've been reaching out to us, and I've been keeping a note of those agencies so that if we do have additional funds in the future, then we can kind of put together another plan of action.
Yeah, that was my point in asking the questions around that, because when we reviewed the CSBG applications, there were some very worthwhile organizations that we didn't manage to fund, and some of those are even more impacted by COVID services than, the ones we have here. So if there was any additional funding, I would want to see us open it up to some of the other agencies who've applied in the past, so, that we can spread out these resources, because it's really tough right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Bridget. Let's see. I just want to welcome Peggy to the call. Peggy, if you could mute your mic, if possible. Are there any other board members with discussion for the motion on the floor? Any other board members wishing to comment? Hearing none, I'm going to call for a vote for the motion. Rebecca?
Linda Glover?
Yes.
Doug Boff?
Yes.
Alicia Pieper?
Yes.
Amy Bogie?
Yes.
Jamie Spinelli?
Yes.
Camera?
Yes.
Tom Breitenbach?
Yes.
David?
Yes. You, by the way, you're not very clear. You're kind of hard for the interpreter and me both to hear.
Oh, I apologize. Is that better?
Yes, that's much better for both of us. Thank you.
Adam Kravitz?
Yes.
Bridget McClemon?
Yes.
Melanie Green?
Yes.
Hillary Prepola?
Yes.
And with that, the motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. We do have task force updates next on our agenda. We have two task forces. One is advocacy and the other is the community needs assessment. So we'll kick it off with Adam to discuss our advocacy work.
We did not have a meeting, so there have been notifications going out. Thank you, Beth, for that. I can say that we haven't been doing very much exactly on the advocacy part of this. Beth, did you have anything to add to that?
This is Beth. So for the time being, the advocacy task force meetings have been suspended. So once, because the bulk of my time had to go to COVID-19 response for the homeless crisis response system. So once I have hours available and we're kind of moving through the pandemic, my hope is to restore those advocacy task force meetings. But again, I think more than likely that will happen when we're able to have in-person meetings instead of virtual meetings, just because the time capacity, it's just not there with the pandemic issues.
That is absolutely completely understandable. And anything else to add, Adam?
No, I'm sorry. I had not even pondered this concept, so I have nothing further to add on the advocacy front. I think we're all just fighting a bigger fight right now, so.
Very good. I agree. Rebecca, I know that you have an update on the community needs assessment.
I do. So we've done nothing since we last met because of the pandemic. As all of us are dealing with, our focus has been directed in other places that are a little bit more time considerate. I did request from the Department of Commerce an extension for the submission of our community needs assessment. It was due at our November board meeting, but they have graciously given us a 6-month extension, so it is now not due until next May. I hope to start working on it again and get the data put together so that we can start meeting again. The thought is that we will try to do some sort of online forums and push kind of everything back. And then if we can do in-person forums later, we will. So staff still needs to kind of sit down and figure out what that new timeline looks like. And then we can move forward. But other than that, the needs assessment is waiting for some love and attention.
Okay, and it sounds like the good news is that we have until next May. Any questions from board members on either of those two items? Hearing none, we'll move to the next item on our agenda, which is the CARES Act legislation update. Michael.
Good morning. And just, Alicia, I want to check before I start speaking. Are we doing any of the City of Vancouver Affordable Housing and Services update?
We will be next on our agenda.
Awesome. Good morning. This is Michael Torres, and I'm going to brief you on the funding that's been coming down or is on its way related to the CARES Act legislation. I'm not really going to get into the community services block grant dollars because that's what this whole meeting has been about. And I think Rebecca has given you a very, very good rundown. One theme that you will see in almost all of these funding sources is that there are still a lot of questions and uncertainty in terms of timelines, in terms of amounts of dollars, and in terms of guidelines that those funds are gonna come with at the federal level. So I will do my best to answer questions if you have them, but the reality is there are a lot of things that are still unanswered. So ESG is Emergency Solutions Grant. Those are federal dollars that are distributed through HUD. With the CARES Act, a first allocation of $9.7 million was allocated to Washington State. We do not yet know how much of that is going to be getting distributed and in what way it's going to get distributed to the counties. And we don't know yet exactly what the timeline of that is going to be. Those are funds that are used for homeless services, specifically shelters, rental assistance, operations, and support services. Support services for people who are facing housing instability. We think, based on conversations with the Washington State Department of Commerce, is that will be we are likely to see about 25% of our CHG, our Consolidated Homelessness Grant, and HEN allocation to be roughly the amount for ESG, which might be around $600,000. That's a guess. I do not know that for sure. Commerce is still, the State Department of Commerce is still trying to figure out what the amounts are going to be that are going to be coming to us, along with the timeline, and along with any recommendations or guidelines that they have in terms of focus for use of those funds. One of the reasons that they're taking a lot of time discussing that is because the revenues at the state level have all significantly dropped. And those revenues are document recording fees, sales tax dollars. That impacts us at a local level. Right now, for our existing contracts, we are still looking steady, but I think that after another year or so, we will be impacted in terms of what we can contract out based on what the revenues today are being collected. It also impacts how much we will receive from Commerce in the consolidated homelessness grant dollars. So what Commerce is trying to think about with these ESG funds is, do they hold off on funding for ESG until they have a better sense of how much CHG will be impacted, or do they forward the ESG funds to the counties as quickly as possible and recommend them to or direct them to be used for prevention rental assistance, knowing that there are a lot of people that are suddenly going to be really having lots of rental stresses. So those are the discussions that they're having. I'm expecting that we will know more in the next 2 weeks based on the conversations we've had with Commerce over the past week and a half. We also expect that there is going to be a second allocation that might be as much as $19 million coming to Washington State. But there still is no information in terms of if that is actually going to happen. And when I say we still don't have that information, the State Department of Commerce does not know yet in terms of HUD. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has not released any information on whether the second allocation is for sure going to happen, how much it's exact, how it's going to be distributed to the states, and what the timeline for that is. So those are all open question marks. For FEMA dollars, there is an amount of, that's the Federal Emergency Management Agency. There are dollars that are currently being made available to localities through their emergency management systems, CRESA, Emergency Operations Center, for the responses to COVID-19. Our region is Region 10. We have identified to FEMA Region 10 through our CRESA, our Emergency Response System, and the Emergency Operations Center, that we do have a need of about $1.5 million to help us sustain current shelter expansion in the homeless system and isolation and quarantine efforts between June 30th and September 30th, and also expand supports for people with behavioral health needs that need to be in shelter expansion, isolation, or quarantine. We do not yet know if that funding is going to be approved or how much. My understanding is that if it does get approved, it will be with authorizations for spending of 30 days, and they'll renew the approval every 30 days if it does. What you see there as Commerce is actually not part of the CARES Act legislation, but we are including it in this discussion because it's part of the COVID-19 response. March 15th, Department of Community Services received a grant from the Washington State Department of Commerce called the COVID-19 Emergency Housing Grant. It was $1.146 million to be used to create isolation and quarantine facilities for people who are experiencing homelessness, and also help with shelter expansion of to help our homeless crisis, our local homeless crisis systems, be able to do social distancing and social isolation for people who are at higher risk if they got COVID-19 due to underlying medical conditions or age. We have done that, and you've probably read in the paper, but we leased a hotel in Vancouver of 116 rooms, and those rooms are being used for three purposes. One is expansion of shelter capacity to help people who, as I mentioned, are at higher risk if they get COVID-19 because of age or an underlying medical condition, including pregnancy, that really have no way to socially isolate or socially distance in a congregate setting, which is what you would really have in most of our shelters, or in an encampment, out on the streets or out there. And right now we just set aside 20 rooms initially. We're expanding it now to 30 rooms for shelter expansion. Those rooms are filled through referrals by homeless service providers to include shelter and outreach. And currently we are at 22 persons who are at that shelter for the shelter expansion in 18 of those rooms. I'm expecting the 20th room will be occupied today, and we're continuing to expand that shelter expansion through 30 rooms. And then we're going to see how are we doing with quarantine and isolation before we grow that shelter expansion again. The second purpose of those rooms of that hotel site, in addition to shelter expansion, is for isolation of people who have COVID-19, do not have significantly more medical needs, but they need a place to basically ride it out and be isolated so they cannot infect other people. Currently, there is one person on the site in isolation. And the third purpose is quarantine for people that have been exposed to someone who has been confirmed to have COVID-19. And currently, we have four people at the site in quarantine. Last week, referrals for testing were finally made available to homeless crisis response system service providers, and referrals for testing from shelter, from volunteers, from outreach teams, not volunteers, I apologize, jail and service providers are ongoing, and we're expecting the isolation and quarantine numbers to steadily increase. But that's the commerce funding. All the contracts for DAT are in place through June 30th, which is why, to go beyond June 30th, we're requesting additional FEMA funding. The community is also getting some additional EFSP dollars. That's Emergency Food and Shelter Program. That's a sub-program of FEMA that's really focused around food and shelter, as the name describes. And that's about $344,981. Those are not dollars that come through the county. They get distributed directly by FEMA to applying service providers through a local emergency food and shelter board. But I just want to make you aware that that is a federal resource that's coming into the community. For a community development block grant, which is the CDBG, we received $890,013. Those dollars are overseen by a different advisory board called the Urban County Policy Board. Those dollars are going to be used for business assistance, for tenant-based rental assistance. So a lot of those dollars are actually are going into the homeless crisis system in tenant-based rental assistance, rapid rehousing programs that are being run by Janice, Share, and Lifeline Connections. For micro enterprise assistance and business development. And the reason behind the business assistance, micro enterprise assistance, and business development funding, the Urban County Policy Board, which is composed of the mayors of all the cities outside of Vancouver or their designated representatives, really are feeling a lot of feedback from their constituents, a small business constituents, that they are significantly being impacted by the pandemic economically. You know, the economic impact to the community has been significant, and the small businesses need assistance as well. And that's one of the purposes of CDBG. So that's why they've dedicated some resources to that. And finally, HOME, the Home Investment Partnership Act dollars, I really don't have any information for that. There have been a lot of, HOME has a lot of restrictions and regulations, you know, program requirements. HUD, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, has moved pretty quickly in granting waivers for different aspects of the management of those dollars to try to make them more flexible. But we haven't had any good information about whether additional home dollars are going to be granted, what the timelines for that may be, if they are, and how much we would be receiving. So that's all the CARES Act legislation updates I have. And if you have any questions, please let me know.
This is Rebecca.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I one of the things that I forgot to mention about the Community Services Block Grant, which is a major win and we hope will continue, is that we can, the CARES Act allows us to serve households up to 200% of the federal poverty level instead of 125%. That's in the CARES Act legislation, and it's allowed for our current annual allocations. So we will be modifying existing contracts to allow our programs to serve up to 200% of the federal poverty level. It will be in new contracts with the CARES Act funding. And there's a big push to make this a permanent change moving forward for future allocations. And so we will be able to help a lot more households going into the future with these funds. So I apologize if I forgot to mention that earlier, but that's a big win that we're hoping to move forward.
Thank you, Rebecca. Any questions from the members of the board, of either Michael or Rebecca?
I do. This is Jamie.
Go ahead.
Michael, did I understand? I was trying to catch the numbers that we have in shelter. Was it 1 in isolation, 4 in quarantine, and 18 in expanded shelter?
Hi, Jamie. This is Michael. Currently, persons is 1 in isolation, 4 in quarantine, 22 in expanded shelter. And those numbers are growing on a daily basis. So what I'm telling you right now will probably be different tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from members of the board? Seeing no mic. Mute, Tom. I saw you unmute for a moment.
Well, I was going to ask a question, but I don't know if it was really that relevant. But I was just wondering, with the talk about shelters, if they knew if the WHO shelters are still open or they closed on yesterday.
So this is Michael. Was someone else about to speak?
Well, I can speak for St. Paul's. I'm sorry, this is Adam. I can speak for St. Paul's. We are operating throughout the summer.
Okay.
And this is Michael, and I know that WHO shelters are not universally operating, but there are some, like St. Paul, as Adam just indicated, is, I believe St. Andrews is on a little bit longer. But honestly, I'm not the person to ask and just report on that right now with authority. Kate Budd with the Council for the Homeless would be the person to ask.
The reason I was wondering is because it may increase the need for more shelter funds. So.
Thank you for the question, Tom. Any other questions from members of the board? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move to the next item. Thank you so much for that update, Michael. It's nice to see that the federal government is taking the local needs seriously and making sure that funding is being sent to the states and that we have that available to us. So the next item, which was, I'm using the agenda that was emailed, I have an update from the City of Vancouver's Affordable Housing Fund and Homeless Services, which I have Peggy Sheehan here on the line. Welcome, Peggy.
Thank you. So I wanted to respond to the question about the WHO shelter. So the City of Vancouver funded both St. Paul's and St. Luke's that they will be open all year. St. Paul's is only open at night, but St. Luke's is open 24 hours. We also funded Living Hope Church is taking up to 17, they have 17 campsites, and they do a combination of people that are staying in their cars and people that are camping on the east side of their church. And they are taking folks that are allowing people to camp there that are homeless as well. And then some of you are aware, the City of Vancouver has worked with the Vancouver Mall to allow up to 50 folks to park at the mall that don't have any other place to go. So we are also did an RFQ for the rental assistance and services. Right now that contract is held by Council for the Homeless, and it's a consortium of 7 agencies that are providing rental assistance and services. And we did an RFQ and received 2 responses, and we'll be making recommendations to Council on those applications on May 18th. We also received money through the CARES Act, and we received a little under $700,000. City Vancouver is looking at using half of that money for services because there's such an increased need for services in our community, especially for people that are homeless. And we'll probably look at some of this stuff that you guys just approved and make sure that we're not that what we fund isn't the same as what you guys fund, or if there's a bigger need, but we'll be looking at that over the next month. And we're also using a portion of that money to help small businesses. We are 2020 CDBG funds. We've also have looked at the priorities related to COVID, and we'll be using some of that money as well for small businesses. And if you want to, the City of Vancouver has their city council meetings. You can log in at any time to see those. And the meeting to discuss all of this will be on May 18th. We have some projects that we funded with the Affordable Housing Fund that are construction that will be moving forward also within the next 60 days. So we'll try and post those on our website. And that's all I have. I don't know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Peggy. Are there any questions from the board?
I wondered if Peggy could give us an update on the Navigation Center.
So right now the Navigation Center is open. I think it's open 2 days a week, maybe 3, for people to come and get their mail. And that's all we have right now.
Any other questions from members of the board?
I have a question.
Go ahead, David.
My question is related to people that are homeless or poor right now. Maybe they weren't before, and maybe they have a disability that is related to the situation. How is CTRAN handling people with disabilities and keeping them safe. And C-VAN, usually with C-VAN, you have to go to the doctor's office and get them to sign forms. Is there, like, any more simplified forms for people to get C-VAN approval right now, or are they kind of stuck?
So C-TRAN's a separate governmental entity that has a board. There are representatives from each city council or county represent their constituencies. I don't know if Peggy, if you're in a position to answer that question, or maybe know of a resource where David could go and get that question answered.
Like you said, Alicia, there is both city and county members on the C-TRAN board. And David, what I can do is pull up that who the board members are and a link to their website and send it to Rebecca, and she can send it out to all of you if you'd like. And they do meet, they meet really often. Linda, I, Councilmember Glover, I know you're on the phone. I don't know if you have any additional information. Are you on the C-TRAN board?
I'm not sure. I'll sit on that board. That would be Tyler Stober, Bart Hansen, or the mayor.
Okay, great. So I can send that out to you, David, and you can see if it's at all helpful. I haven't heard anything that they're doing.
So we'll get follow-up for you on that question, David. Thank you. You're welcome. Any other questions for members of the board about the Affordable Housing Fund or homeless services offered through the City of Vancouver? Jamie?
Yeah, it's not a question. I just wanted to follow up. For whoever asked about the Navigation Center, it's open Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to noon, just to get mail and use the porta potties.
Thank you for that detail. Okay, seeing no other open mics, I want to...
I just want to add, it just seems really ludicrous with all this funding for various programs and services coming into the community that we can't find some way to open the Navigation Center for at least showers and laundry for some hours a week. And I feel like it's sitting there, and we should be able to do it. And I don't know who, how, or where and when it could be done. But I'd feel bad if I didn't say that at this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Bridget, for putting that on the record. Any other comments?
Yes, this is Hillary Prepula. This is not necessarily a comment to Peggy, but I guess Peggy and Michael both. Peggy, you had mentioned that you were working with the county to determine what funds were going where and ensuring people weren't funding the same types of programs. And I'm wondering, and I think that's great. I'm wondering if there's also some communication or collaboration with other local nonprofits or even other funding streams like the Community Foundation's COVID response to ensure sort of the same types of programs or efforts aren't being mutually funded, just to sort of in an attempt to spread those dollars out as much as possible. Is there communication with them as well? And I guess the broader question is, does the county, is that a matter the county cares about?
This is Michael. Wow, I don't know why that's that. Yes, that matters, and the county does care about that. And we do, we are informed and know what the Community Foundation funds. Our director of the Community Services Department is on the board of the Community Foundation, and we've been, kept abreast every funding meeting they have in terms of what requests were funded. Both the city and the county participate in the COC, the Continuum of Care Steering Committee, which is where we, it's kind of the entity that discusses and coordinates, if you remember back to the CAB training earlier this year, the COC steering committee is kind of like the coordinating body advisory board on homeless crisis response and the system. So both the city and the county participate in that, and the city and the county share with each other the funding decisions that they've done and the funding allocations for home, for CDBG, for all our requests for applications. So, you know, one area that I'm pretty confident about is that we're not duplicating a lot of funding in this community in general. You know, that's whether we're talking community foundation, county, or city. And where we are funding similar activities is with knowledge of what the other is funding. And there's usually a slightly different thing about that activity that is being funded. So, like, to give you an example, the Community Foundation has done a lot of focus in terms of funding some of the hygiene products and, some of those aspects around COVID. The county has done a lot of funding in terms of the operations piece, the staffing costs, things like that. I'm sure there's always more coordination that can be done, and we're always seeking to make it better. But there is actually a lot of actions to make each other aware of what the other is doing. Things like Peggy's in this meeting right now where we're discussing these things, and she's briefing us on like the affordable housing and homeless services update that the city is doing. So we try to keep track of that. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board? Okay, thank you so much, Michael. Thank you, Peggy, for being here and for the update. Glad to hear staying healthy. So we only have two more items on our agenda. One is to go over the July through December 2019 funding finance report, and Rhonda is going to provide us an update. And then after this report, we'll move to an open forum where individuals who are on the call from the community who wishes to comment will have the opportunity to do so. So with that, Rhonda.
Hi, this is Alyssa Page. I'm standing in for Rhonda today. I'm with Community Services Finance Team. And the report's going to look a little bit different this time, and this is my first time seeing the reports or going over them. But with teleworking from home and our new financial system, we're having a tougher time pulling more detailed information. So this is going to be a higher view of the funded amounts, the total expenditures, and the percentages spent. So the programs we have here are the CSBG Federal, the Human Service Funds, and it totals those expenditures there for the community action. We have the Consolidated Homeless Grant, Housing and Essential Needs, and the deed recordings together, and then it'll give you all the funds, expenditures, and the percentage spent to date. Did anyone have any questions about the numbers that we have from the report?
This is Rebecca, and I just want to clarify that these are funds that were expended from the very start of our brand new contracts, July 1, 2019, through the end of the year, December 31st, 2019. So it's halfway through the first year of fiscal year of spending. You'll notice the Community Services Block Grant Federal Funds are a little bit high because we also get a state grant that is provided to us, but We have a short time frame to spend those out, and so Rhonda usually allocates those to be spent in the January through June time frame. So we obviously didn't have any to spend during this the snapshot for this report. So it puts the federal a higher rate of spending the federal funds during the time frame of this report.
So, Bridget McLeman here. Just a question. We're not going to, and I understand any technical things, but we're not going to get a breakdown by programs receiving the funds and the percentage that they have spent. We're going to get this higher level one?
For this report, Bridget, yes.
Okay.
And only this time. We are trying to figure out how to work with the new financial system to see what we can get a breakdown, you know, for our November report, which will give us the first fiscal year of the contracts. We're hoping to be able to break it down better, but the system, it's a little bit harder to pull those numbers together, and it's very difficult when you're trying to work from home and put this for this report.
Sure. Well, I understand. Thank you.
Okay, and I know during, this is Alicia, during Michael's report, he talked about some of the potential decline in revenue due to the economic conditions of COVID-19. And one of those funding sources is the deed recording fees. So in the funded amount of $3.6 million for the county, is that deed recording fees collected in 2018 to be expended in the 2019 fiscal year? Or is it the 2019 funds collected for 2020? Because I know our fiscal year is different at the county than what it is for our grant program. So for that 3.6, how much of a buffer do we have in our financing for the deed recording?
Yeah, this is Michael. So that's 2019, primarily 2019 funds to be expended this year in 2020. And the way the county does it, as you mentioned, Alicia, is we collect revenue from 1 year to and then expend it the next contract year. And the reason we do that is exactly the kind of situation that we are now, so that we can provide some stability to our homeless service providers and our contracts in going through that without having to do significant reductions. So we believe that at this time, we're in pretty good shape in terms of deed recording surcharges, but it's going to be year three. So like beyond, you know, between 2021 and 2022, where we're really going to be like, you know, the impacts of the revenues now is what, you know, it's going to impact 12 months from now, you know, starting 12 months from now. So, so right now, I think, you know, like there is stability, you know, for the next year and a half, but we're really going to be looking at 2021 to 2022, like that July, you know, July 2021 through, you know, mid 2022 is where it's going to start being a little bit more interesting, I think.
Yeah, in my office, we are tracking daily real estate transactions since we process all of the REIT. And I can tell you from January 1 of 2020 through April 30th of 2020, we're still up about 2.3% in the number of transactions over 2019, but we did see a 15% decrease in the month of April. So it was strong January and February numbers carried the decrease in transactions in April. So there, I mean, as of right now, we're still ahead of 2019, but if, you know, the real estate still continues to cool through May and June and on, I agree with you, Michael. I think there will be a decrease in the number of recordings that are occurring. So very good. Does anyone have any other questions about the financial report? Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate that, Alyssa.
So our final item for today's agenda is an open forum for those individuals on the phone who may want to make a comment. You can have up to 3 minutes. If anyone on the phone would like to speak, please unmute your mic and I can invite you to comment. I know we have some service for providers on here. Is there anyone from the audience or our guests online who would like to comment? Okay, seeing none, if I'm not missing anybody, we'll close the open forum and discuss other business.
Hi, this is Rebecca again. So just a reminder, May is Community Action Month, so it's all about the Community Services Block Grant. Last year, we were able to do quite a bit of social media posting to, you know, get the word out about Community Action Month, and we were able to do a proclamation. I'm still hopeful we'll be able to do a proclamation later this month. However, you know, our county council wants things very focused on the pandemic, and so additional business is not being conducted. The only reason we're having our meeting today is because we have COVID discussions going on. And so hopefully I will use my personal social media to share things that are going on for the Community Action Month and different information that's being shared. And those of you that are connected with me, I highly recommend sharing that information and getting the word out about, you know, the great work that we do through the Community Services Block Grant and Community Action Programs. And we'll, you know, do as much as we can throughout the month to get the word out.
Alicia, this is Doug.
Hi, Doug. Go ahead.
Hi. I just would like to recognize Michael and Rebecca and today's presenters. We're going through very challenging times right now, and I know that their workloads have increased tremendously, and I just want to thank everyone for all the hard work they are doing.
Very good. Thank you so much for that thoughtful comment, Doug. Thank you for the other business report, Rebecca. And on the screen, you'll notice that there is a save the date. Our next board meeting is scheduled for July 7th of 2020. On the agenda that went out via email, it does say it will occur at the Center for Community Health, but I know the team at the county are actively staying on top of the governor's recommendations and public health recommendations. So if we need to make adjustments, we'll do so closer to that date. Is there any other items for the good of the order from the board? Any other items for the good of the order? Okay, hearing none, I'll officially adjourn the meeting and want to appreciate everyone. We had really great attendance today. We took care of some large business and making sure we're getting that CARES Act funding out to the great nonprofits that are doing really difficult work during these stressful times. So I want to thank each of the nonprofits and service providers who are on the call today for all that you do. I'm hoping that this funding can help families and individuals who are in need during these difficult times. So thank you everyone for being on the call. Appreciated all of the comments and questions, and thank you to the team at the county and the staff for all your good work.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Alicia, for being a very organized meeting. We appreciate that.
Of course. My pleasure.
Thank you,
all right, have a terrific Tuesday, everybody.